All right, I mean, guys, that's on mic, so that's how we're starting the episode. This is Hodinkee Radio, Day 2 from Watches and Wonders 2023. I am your host, James Stacey, and we've got a cast and crew here that's a little bit more than the microphones that I brought or that my recorder can handle, but I'm really thrilled for it, so I'll kick off from my left. Mark, how's it going?
Living the dream, man. This is really exciting. First Watches and Wonders.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to dig into that experience. Next up, we've got Brandon also here.
Yo, what's going on, everyone?
Not too much, my man. Nice to see you. Next up, we've got Tony.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. And finally, we've got a reprisal of Ben from yesterday. Ben, hey, how we doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. We saw some crazy stuff today, so I'm glad that you
we
made
really
it to the
did.
Recording.
We really did. I just kind of like butted my way into this episode just because we saw some crazy stuff today.
Yeah, and I feel like I've said crazy stuff before.
Yeah.
I saw something today one, will never see again.
Correct.
And two, had no earthly right to see in the first
place. Can confirm, you did not deserve to be in that room, for sure. Yeah,
yeah. We saw some wild, wild stuff, so... Look, we're going to get to that in a minute. That's a little bit of a teaser. I do want to chat to these guys, the three new fellas. How's the show going? How we starting out? We're what, we'll call it 2 days in. It's roughly the end of the second day. You guys sleeping much?
I was so...
You're getting the amount your doctor says, it's like 3 to 3.5 hours?
Yeah, something like that. I'm suddenly on the Logan Baker sleep schedule of like...
So nowhere near three then.
But no, I mean, I got my work done last night and then I was completely exhausted, but for some reason my brain just wouldn't shut down.
Oh, sure.
It was just, there was so much going. So I think I fell asleep maybe 2:45, yep. And then woke up at 6 to get in line for an hour in the security line. I mean,
yeah,
it
was something else this morning.
It's been bonkers, and I didn't know what to expect, and in some ways I'm really happy because the amount of work is really high, but it's manageable, more manageable than I thought. And then at the same time, I feel like I'm just completely overloaded. It's a weird dichotomy.
I mean,
sure.
I've done this. If you count shows separately, this is probably like my 12th or 13th fair, and that's how they all feel. So you're doing just fine. Don't worry about it. Stay in the mix. Keep your head up. Yeah, get a couple hours of sleep. And Brandon, how are you doing?
I'm alive.
You've been carrying a camera. Brandon's our video guy, and he's doing some really incredible stuff. And you're shooting for kind of a larger project that people will see after the show.
Yeah, so I'm recording a lot throughout the show, some behind-the-scenes stuff, just me walking around, and it'll be sort of a vlog at the end. I'm shooting a little bit of stuff for social, too, but the main objective is to have something maybe a week or so after the show, just to show everyone what's kind of going on here and give them like an inside look at what happens at Watches and Wonders. So.
Sure, you're keeping your batteries charged.
Yeah, all 15 of them are charged. I'm cycling through them faster than I ever have. It's my first time, so day one was, I was like a deer in the headlights, like, what is going on? Day two, much more calm, still kind of wild, but getting as much as I can. But yeah, it's a good time.
I loved seeing Brandon at the end of the day yesterday, and I think we were both in the very same spot where it just kind of looked like we were both like staring blankly off into the distance.
Thousand-yard stare.
Yeah,
for sure.
And it was the best thing.
Keep your eyes on the horizon sometimes.
It was like looking in a mirror in some ways.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we're both in this in the same way together. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a buzz, but as with any buzz, like, you know, you've got to kind of ride the wave there, and that's how it can be, especially over a course of several days. And, you know, to Mark's previous point, did you get stuck in the same security? So you have to go through security when you get here. And if everybody shows up at the show roughly at the same time, you'll notice me. I book the schedule. I come later at the day.
two full stops on our bus route, our shuttle bus route. Two
were full up.
People couldn't get on. Two, like, it was probably a hundred people that got stuck at their hotels for our shuttle bus. People were sitting on the floor in our shuttle bus. That's how crammed it was to get in at 8 a.m.
I feel like the economy of scale on public transport really doesn't require anyone to sit down. You're probably better off standing, but, you know, fair enough. Tony, how about you? You weren't the one sitting, I suppose.
Luckily, my hotel is right across from the Plexpo here, but
it kind of reminds
me of Vegas, to be honest with you, in a way. Like, I haven't seen the sun in 2 days now. Just breathing this filtered air. The carpets around here, they're beigey. They're a little bit dirty. There's ostentatious displays of luxury pretty much everywhere you look.
Sure.
You sit down anywhere and someone much more good looking than me, maybe not James Stacey, is there to serve me an espresso and whatever I want to eat. But it's wild.
Yeah, I definitely have the coffee taps by about midday. I'm just tapping my feet or my fingers, something like that. You just kind of...
My legs haven't stopped moving since I sat down.
Bopping and weaving the whole day.
You guys are both doing that right now.
That's why we're drinking champagne now. We're looking for some downers.
You got to ride the wave. It's ups and downs for sure. Well, look, guys, I'm thrilled to have you guys here this year and have you on the team. And definitely the work that's come out so far has been nothing short of impressive. I'm super pumped to see Brandon's final project in a little while after the show. Certainly stay tuned for that. And I guess we buried the lead or teased it at the start, but it's probably time to chit-chat a little bit with Ben about some of this wild stuff we saw at Rolex today. So
yeah,
if you listened to yesterday's episode, the day one episode, Danny Malaika and Ben, and Ben and I had been at a Patek meeting, so we missed the Rolex meeting. We went in today.
Is that a humble brag, or was that just a brag?
I was wearing a tie. There's my humble brag.
Can confirm.
For myself. But yeah, we went to Rolex today. That's where I started my day today, and... You know, there was a couple from yesterday that I was excited to see. I really mentally didn't understand the sort of puzzle watch.
Yes.
And the balloon watch, and we've seen both of those.
Yeah.
And
what do you think?
I can see why people are going to go nuts for them, because of the execution of the bright colors and the functionality and the kind of whimsy of it.
Yeah.
Is a nice antidote to how serious watches can be at times.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into the off-catalog stuff imminently, but I would say that now that I've seen the emoji watch, I guess what we're calling it,
good one.
I predict 4x retail immediately what they'll trade for. I mean, it's just, it's bananas.
And the balloon one, or the bubble one, sorry, is like normal OP pricing.
It's an OP, yeah.
That's going to be an ungettable watch. Like anyone who likes their watches colorful, you know, I'm wearing a Pelagos. Like, clearly, I'm a little bit afraid of a really brightly colored, especially watch with a bunch of color on it. But I think if you're a color nerd and maybe you've got an orange OP and that's not, or that yellow OP and that's not quite enough, that would be the next move if you could score one. Solid price point. The rest of it, got to see the solid gold GMT, which is an
super
absolute
cool.
heartbreaker.
It's a killer, stud.
Yeah, really like it. Definitely makes me feel better about myself when it's on my wrist, which is, you know, that's all I can ask for from a watch, really.
Yep.
And then while we were standing there or sitting there at the meeting, they brought in some cases and said, very, you know, no photos moving
and
on.
And they really meant that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No iPhone photos.
No, photos for friends or anything like that. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
And I'd seen some leaks. On Instagram of some of the off catalog stuff,
500 pixel wide screenshots of 17 watches or something.
Correct.
Where you couldn't really tell what they were, but
just
enough to get you excited.
So we know what they are now.
Oh, and then some. Yeah, and then some. So obviously, I think the one that I caught because of Mark, it was this Ruby Daytona.
I'm so jealous that you got to see that. I mean, I totally get the whole rainbow thing. I understood what, you know, the John Mayer talking watches thing, like it's you're not that guy until you put one on, and then you're that guy.
You're absolutely that guy. Yeah.
And that's what got me like interested in the gem set stuff, and I started to be able to understand that. But I don't think really anything has captivated my attention as much as that really low resolution picture of that Ruby Daytona. And it's a bummer that I wasn't in that room.
That is a bummer for you, yeah.
I'm gonna go home and cry about it.
Yeah.
It gets way nuttier, but let's start there. So that's a modern issue Daytona.
Platinum, I think it's platinum. Platinum or white gold, I forget.
I believe it was platinum.
Yeah, and
750.
It's, yeah, ruby and sapphire, I believe. How would you describe the colorway?
Like a dark, very rich crimson sort of red.
Yeah.
Black dial, kind of a standard dial, but with red accents.
Yep.
And then gem set indices.
Right.
And then along, kind of like on the rainbow, along the kind of curvature of the crown guards.
Yeah.
That's pave.
Right.
Really kind of just jaw-dropping and somehow still sporty.
Yeah. Still a Daytona. I mean, you know, not to be crass about this, but like I've seen lots and lots of modern Rolex. I know how much the rainbow Daytona was when it was launched. It was about $106,000. $106,000 for the rainbow.
Insane.
Keep that in mind. You know how much this watch was? $440,000. Think about that. This is four rainbow Daytonas. Just in terms of, that's how Rolex values this watch. I mean, just bananas.
That's the cost of, I guess, rubies.
I guess. I don't know enough about it, but yeah.
That's my question. Is that the cost that the market could bear? Or is that like,
there's no market.
This isn't
a literal Veblen good.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But that's what I'm wondering is like, if you're Rolex and you know you can print money with this thing, are you Are you doing that, or is Rolex like?
Yeah, Rolex is not greedy, and I really mean that. Like, they are not greedy in that way. Like, they have the integrity to say, like, this is what the market should be for a watch like this. And there's something about that watch that I'm sure is far more complex than anybody here could understand. Yeah. But that was shockingly expensive for a retail price of a Rolex.
I mean, because the next stage didn't even have a price tag on it.
So then we saw something that truly didn't have a price tag on it. And just to give context, James and I both held the watch we're about to discuss in our hands, and we didn't know what model it was. It was like, is this a GMT or a Submariner?
I thought it was a GMT, so let's walk you through. So they open the case, and it's just all you can see is diamonds.
Somebody thought it was a Skydweller. Yeah. I mean, we were told it was a Skydweller. What is this?
But then there's no complication on the dial, because there's no dial. It's just diamonds.
It was one giant diamond.
They had Rolex printed on the underside of the crystal, no signature of the model.
Yeah.
But it's a date with a Cyclops. Yeah. It's very big. And it might be an SD. Then we're like, oh, maybe it's a GMT, but there's no fourth hand, so it's not a GMT. Bezel turned only one way, right. So it was a dive watch of some sort. And then it was after they took the thing away, and they're like, oh, it was a Seadweller.
It was a Seadweller. So this Seadweller was fully covered in diamonds in a way that I've never seen on any watch, including a Jacob & Co. Yeah. It had diamonds on the case back. It had diamonds on the band. It had diamonds. I mean, like the side of the links of the bracelet had diamonds on it.
So I feel like pretty much anybody listening will know the shape of a Rolex case back.
Yes.
It's a circle that meets at a higher circle, essentially. Right. And the edge of that higher circle was wrapped in baguette diamonds.
I've just never in my life seen anything like it.
It was nothing like an Oyster bracelet.
Yeah.
The sides of the bracelet, gem set. The entire flank of the bracelet and its clasp, entirely gem set and covered in like Rolex crowns along the set. Lug edges, sides, fronts. Really anywhere where you can imagine there being possibly a chamfer on a watch is the only place where there wasn't diamonds on this watch.
Correct. Yeah.
Do you guys think this is a one-of-one situation?
I don't know if it's one of one. Like, Rolex doesn't do that, you know? But there's probably, like, one now. Like, they made one of them to show to, like, you know, the Siddiqui's or Mike Tay or somebody like that. And, like, they might get one or something like that. But, yeah, I would guess, like, the retailers that I just mentioned plus one or two elsewhere might get them. But, yeah, I would say four, something like that. But we'll never know, of course, until we see it on, like, Drake's wrist in, like, 6 months or something like that.
It had the Drake thing.
It did, for sure.
It was absolutely nutty. And then, you know, there's cases of a couple other things that were all, you know, there was a Yachtmaster in yellow gold that was full pave, but not to the same extent as this Seadweller.
Crazy stuff. Yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of the stuff that we see every year when we go to this meeting. It's like, okay, here's the off-catalog stuff. It's a Yachtmaster with fucking Sprite crystals or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's whatever. Or like, there was
Sodalite Daytona.
That Platinum Daytona. Yeah. It was a Platinum Daytona like we saw, but with a pave bezel, which was sick. But it's like, okay, like, I get that. That's kind of expected. The two things that we just discussed, like, never in my life have I seen anything like either of those.
The fact that you mentioned Jacob & Co. and Rolex in the same sentence to me, like, right. like that,
that's how crazy it was.
Last night, Jacob & Co. had an event to announce a watch that they are claiming to sell for $20 million, which is like their billionaire plus, whatever it is. And the fact that you're now saying like, yeah, okay, Jacob, but Rolex outdid you is kind of insane to me.
It's a different vibe. And especially when they did it with arguably their second most toolish watch. You know, being a Seadweller, you know, we're gonna go out on a limb and say we checked and no, it doesn't still retain 3,900 meters of water resistance. But it was just a nutty thing to see, and especially after seeing the core product, the new Daytona,
yeah, like the titanium Yachtmaster. It's like, okay, like the antithesis, like the polemic, like opposite of that, you know, just a wild experience. Yeah. And happy to share it with you, James.
It was fun. We had a good time.
Yeah.
Before I let you go entirely. And any parting thoughts now that you've had the Daytona on your wrist? Because I am so impressed by it.
Yeah, it's Rolex is so annoying. It's just like yesterday I was kind of like, whatever. Like, you know, it really is that much better. The dial in particular is a lot better. Now that I've, you know, the Sapphire case back on the Daytona, like that really made no sense to me at all. It's really well done. I didn't get to loop it or really examine it, but it is far better finished than I would have imagined. So not a surprise. Like, I love it because I'm a dork, you know. Yeah.
Little tweaks, really, from one, but big tweaks for not only Rolex folks, but definitely Daytona nerds. So thanks for weighing in on the wild stuff, man.
Anytime.
All right. I do want to get into, obviously, yesterday's episode was Rolex, Patek, Tudor, that sort of thing. But you guys saw a lot of those brands yesterday. So let's get your thoughts on that before we move to a couple of fresh brands for the other half of the show. You guys, who here got a chance to check out the latest from Tudor?
we were all at Tudor. It was Tudor being Tudor, right? They cleaned everything up a little bit. The 54 that you wrote up, especially, I think, was impressive for me.
It's good, right?
Yeah. I put it on next to my 58, and it made me not want to toss my 58 in the trash necessarily, but it had me thinking about what to do with it. It's slimmer. It's smaller.
Tell me you're a vintage guy without saying you're a vintage guy, right?
Stop it, James. So that's good. But, you know, a lot of the other stuff, there's in-house movements up and down the line now, which is cool to see for them. I know you were there checking that out, and there's probably more to come on that front.
Yeah, for sure.
But sure. It's Tudor being Tudor, and it's cool to see. I think in a year when Rolex did all this wild stuff that you guys are just talking about, Tudor is the one that was buttoned up and serious this year, which is interesting to see, I suppose.
Absolutely. Mark, how about you? What'd you see at Tudor that kind of left an impression?
The Black Bay GMT with the white dial, I think, is a smart move from Tudor. I don't know how much I necessarily would love it as something to add to my collection. I don't think it'd be the first thing that I'd go for, but I think it finally was Tudor stepping out of Rolex's shadow in a way that's also kind of ironic, because it's definitely a callback to the old Rolex albino GMTs.
This is a 64... Yeah. Reference on those.
Yeah, 6542. Yeah, for the albino 6542, and they floated around for a while. And when that came out, the first thing I did was I texted a couple people in the vintage space, and I said, you know, did we ever get a concrete answer on whether or not those things were real? Because there was a lot of questions, and it wasn't just individual watches. It's just, did those things actually ever exist?
Right.
And I texted John Goldberger, and his response was, hard question.
Okay.
And that's all I got. And so I appreciated the response for sure.
Is that Goldberger's version of a maybe?
Yeah, I think so. And sometimes it's, you know, he's definitely a person to chat with over the phone if you want answers like that. But it's a complicated thing. I did hear, though, that there is some proof that they did actually exist in Rolex's archives. And so, like, that's an exciting bit of news. But also, it's just exciting that Tudor is doing something that I think a lot of people maybe criticized the Black Bay GMT in the past as being like a stopping point if you were really wanting to get a Rolex GMT eventually. And now Rolex doesn't make that. Only Tudor has that now. And so you can get something without looking down at your wrist and thinking like, yeah, but I wish I had the Rolex. And for the people that, you know, still wanted the black dial, you can still get that. And that's great. I totally understand that it's a lot of money for some people to go for the Rolex, and maybe they don't want it, but
or it's a lot of money, or you might have to wait forever.
Yeah, exactly. And right. I think that's the main thing. Like, I've looked at getting a Black Bay GMT a number of times, and it was largely because of the weight. But the reason that I didn't was I was afraid that I'd look down at my wrist and be like, yeah, but this isn't actually what I wanted. Now I've got an option that's distinctly its own thing.
Yeah,
and maybe it could be the thing that I wanted.
Yeah, very cool. Brandon, what'd you think from Tudor?
One cool thing, I don't know if you guys talked about this yesterday, was the pop-up shop.
Went to check it out, right? We kind of like alluded to it, and we wrote a story on the side. Check the show notes if you don't know, but Brandon will walk you through it.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. So Tudor launched all the new novelties, and at the same time, they opened up a pop-up shop in Geneva, and they're selling all the novelties there day of. It was pretty neat. I got there at 10 o'clock.
What'd you pick up?
What will I pick up? I'll have to talk to the wife first, but I was very tempted. But no, I got there, and apparently David Beckham was there like 10 minutes before me. Missed out on him. But it was it's pretty neat. They said that they were opening at 10 a.m. on the website, but I got there at 10 and they were not open. They opened it at like noon. There were a bunch of people coming back and forth to check it out, and nobody was allowed in, and people were disappointed. So I took off at around noon, and that's when more people started to come and try to get in. But yeah, it was a pretty neat experience. Out of the watches that came out for Tudor, I was really surprised by, or not surprised, I just liked a lot.
Yeah.
The Black Bay Burgundy with the Jubilee or Five Link bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that one was a really cool one. It was it's a third generation, I believe, of the model because they had the Etta Movement first, and they did the in-house, and now they're doing Master Chronometer, which is great to me. And then they had what was weird to me, though, is I always thought that watch was the second generation with the in-house movement was too big. And I don't know exactly what they did with the case design, but it does feel a little bit smaller and more manageable on my wrist.
You tried it with the bracelet?
Yeah, I tried it's probably the Jubilee bracelet. Yeah.
It's about a millimeter thinner, too, they said.
Yeah, it's a little bit thinner. It's a slightly different shape for the case, to my understanding. But it, I also think that the bracelet makes a big difference.
I think so, too. And I wish I had the second gen with me to sort of compare. But, yeah, I really like that. And as you mentioned, what did I get from the pop-up shop? That's what I would get.
Yeah, trying on the new Burgundy. My wife's daily is a Black Bay 41, and trying on the new Burgundy is a not insignificant change in ergonomics. And part of it, I genuinely believe, is just the way that a five link, you know, in quotations, small J Jubilee, kind of drapes around your wrist. And my guess is that would be even better if it was, you know, all sized up for you and ready to go. But yeah, I think those are going to be very popular watches because that size, I don't believe, has diminished for them in popularity. Obviously, the 58 has become something of a darling for journalists and enthusiasts and that sort of thing. But I think that still is huge mass market appeal at 41, let alone the 54. So,
James, can I ask you a question real quick about in the Tudor and Rolex space? Did you get to try on the Yachtmaster in titanium?
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed listening to the podcast from yesterday, so I don't know. But
I did it this morning.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you tried it on this morning. You have the Pelagos 39. I wish that I had that with me to kind of compare. What did you think about the two in comparison to each other?
So it's a weird bit of pickiness. Weirdly, I think that the Yachtmaster, and I'm not sure how to explain why, the finishing is better. It's grade 5, so that's one. It's RLX grade 5. The expression of the Pelagos is a little bit more utilitarian, whereas you have three levels of finishing on the Yachtmaster. I vastly prefer the bezel on the Pelagos, 60 click dive. I think, like, especially for the money, but even if you go to a drastically more expensive watch, the 58s and the Pelagos just, they click really nicely, and the Yachtmaster kind of has a different focus, so there's more clicks in there and that sort of thing. I think also the lightness is almost belied by the width at 42 millimeters. I think the real comparison in my mind would be a standard Pelagos, which is almost 42 millimeters, and the new one, because this just looks so much smaller. The 3 millimeters makes a real difference. But I was impressed by just how insanely light. I think they said it was a little under 100 grams. Yeah, which is on a bracelet.
Which was the thing to me. I mean, we handed it around yesterday in the group, and it was that sort of the whole Richard Mille lightness laugh that everybody had. Because it's not the same lightness, but you have it in your head what a Rolex stainless steel model should look like,
sure,
and feel like, and you pick that up and it is not what you are expecting when it's in your hand.
Yeah, for sure. I think that probably, you know, gets us up to date on Rolex and Tudor, and we did a bunch of that in yesterday's episode if you happen to miss it, but I'm glad we could get your guys' points on that. Brandon, you've got a GS on your wrist?
Yeah, I have a Grand Seiko on my wrist.
Did you get a chance to see them today? I wasn't able to make that meeting.
Yeah, I did. And we saw the Tentograph. That name is so funny to me, but yeah, the new Chronograph Tentograph. Oh, the Chronograph Tentograph. That's such a weird.
So this is their first mechanical Chronograph.
Yes, the first mechanical Chronograph from them. They didn't have a working unit. I did want to try one out. It was pretty neat. It's just kind of hard when you can't really see a real working model.
Were you able to throw the dummy model on your wrist?
Yeah, I think it's like 43.5 millimeters. For me, it was a little large, but it has shrank down from their previous chronos in the past. And I really like how the pushers aren't quite as large as their previous versions. But yeah, it was I don't have too much to say about it because I like having like a working model there. So it just felt a little odd.
Yeah, for sure. I think that'll be one to be pretty fun to see once it's ready to go. Anything else there that kind of...
Yeah, they had that one that I was in love with. The Shunbun from their Micro Artist Studio. It was stunning. I think that it has the exact, not the exact, but a very similar dial layout as the SBGA 413, that sort of light off pink dial where sometimes it looks like a light gray and sometimes it's pink, and then you match that with the gold case that this one came in, And it was for me, that was one of my favorites that I've seen in Watches Wonders so far. It was gorgeous.
I could talk a little bit about this one because this was the one I was excited to write up coming out of Grand Seiko. It's the Grand Seiko Hana Akita in rose gold. So yeah, that one, James, as I point to my article on the Hodinkee website about to be published, you can check it out just like James. It's the SBGY 026 for the Grand Seiko reference nerds out there. It's beautiful. You know, I make this point in my article, but there's something about a pink-on-pink watch that's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, vintage Patek nerds go crazy for them for a reason, and this is like a modern incarnation of that straight out of Japan. It's gorgeous. A lot of times that SBGA 413, the pale pink dial, you can barely even tell it's pink in some lights. It's unmistakable on the rose gold just because of the way the rose gold interacts with the pink dial, and I do think it's a little bit pinker. It's hard to tell in the fluorescently lit halls of the Polexpo, but it's a gorgeous watch. The unfortunate thing on some respects is, like many Grand Seikos, it's a limited edition. There's only 100 of them. I bet they're pretty much accounted for by now, and it's $27,500. A lot of money for a 38mm dress watch, but man, is it gorgeous.
That's such a nice size for a Grand Seiko as well.
To me, listen, the Tenograph is cool. They spent a lot of time explaining the mechanics of it to us. And if Grand Seiko is excited about the mechanics and the technicals of a movement, you should probably be pretty excited about it too, yeah, knowing what they do. But to me, this is pure Grand Seiko. Time-only dress watch, spring drive movement, so it's going to sweep smoothly across the pink dial. Like, this is what I want from Grand Seiko.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, my guess is they must have known they needed to bring some heat after last year with the Kodo. Right, like
they told us that pretty much explicitly.
One of the wildest watches ever out of the brand.
They're telling us, they're like, you know, Richard Mille and AP collectors are knocking on their door, showing them the receipts that they've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for RMs and APs, and they're trying to get one of those 20 Kodos. And there's nothing quite like that in this collection. It's more consumer grade stuff, but that's why people like Grand Seiko, because it's great value for what it is.
Yeah, totally.
I saw a Grand Seiko. I don't remember what it was, but you know, their continual use of that engraved case design is just pretty phenomenal. Yeah. And it's a good callback to some of their like hammered cases that they've done historically. I know not everybody loves them, but I love that they're at least doing them.
Absolutely. No, and I like that it's a unique take on the way that they approach watchmaking. And something that, yeah, not everybody else is doing it, but they do it, and they do it at a high level, which is fun.
And the fact that they Zeratsu polish their cases before they engrave the crap out of them is kind of amazing to me. Like, this is them saying, like, this is the right way to do it. Even if we're destroying what we're doing, it's sure, still correct.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm glad you mentioned it at least quickly. It's engraved. It's the SBGZ009. This is kind of the showstopper for them, they told us. It's about $70,000, but it takes the white birch motif from the dial, and they do it all along the case. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. It's about $70,000, but this is the one that, you know, to tell the story simply, this is where the artisans learn from Philippe Dufour, and the movement is finished higher than an Aichi 2 or something like that. So this is the showstopper for the year.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing. We have a story on that one on the website, so check that out. It'll be in the show notes. And yeah, after Grand Seiko, I'd love to jump into a meeting that I went to today to see a watch that like I didn't fully understand until I saw it in person. And that's this new Oris Kermit. Like, I understand the appeal of the Muppets, obviously. I grew up with Muppet Caper and this kind of stuff. I, you know, the Road Trip Across America one. Like, all this stuff is great. I just didn't understand why it needed to be part of a watch. And then I saw the watch in question. It's an Oris Pro Pilot X400. And it's just super cool. The color is like a green I've never seen on a watch before. It glows. You can see it from the other side of the room. We've got something cool coming about this watch and its subject matter, so stay tuned for that. But have you guys had a chance to see this?
I saw it teased in photos, and then it just so happened that they were going to be in town with one of these watches, and they said, okay, you can shoot it ahead of the show and under embargo and everything. And it kind of really thawed my already jaded watch writer heart a little bit. I mean, I felt like I shouldn't love it as much as I did, but just seeing Oris put Kermit in the date window like that and him looking at you, I mean, it would be fun if it was every day, but I like the treat of like it's only once, and like it brightens your day that one day a year. But I was impressed. The same with the color. Like, I was impressed. They really went out of their way to make it Kermit green. The only thing that I can think right now is I'm sitting here in the room with Ben, and I want to hear him do the Kermit the Frog here voice. If I he can't. Oh man. I thought if
I feel like our CEO Jeff can do a great Kermit.
Certainly can.
Do you want to get it on the mic and do that? All right, here's our CEO Jeff doing a Kermit voice. This is a Hodinkee Radio exclusive.
Hi ho there, Kermit the Frog reporting from the Palexpo in Geneva. Over to you, James.
Thank you so much, Jeff. You're a good sport.
I'm really glad that I tried to put Ben under the gun and we got that instead. That was fantastic.
Well, that was a delightful and unplanned interlude.
His response, I most certainly can.
Yeah, exactly. How dare you challenge? Yeah.
Let it never be said that we're not having fun here.
No, what, oh, else, yeah, what sure. else is in the repertoire there?
We now have singing that's not on mic. Next year, I will come with several more mics than I have now. That's an absolute treat, as was the watch. And definitely a cool thing to see. If you get a chance to swing by any sort of an aura spot, obviously they're in the Hodinkee shop and aren't lasting very long in the shop currently. The watch is proving to be very quite popular, but it's something fun to see. Yeah, like a watch that has such a kind of, you know, they had the pink version last year, but even that had this kind of coolness, tonality, not a philosophy. They're all pretty cool, but the green is a really nutty green to see on a watch.
And Oris told me that their number one thing is literally in their whatever their description of what the company should be doing is to have fun. And like, this is fun. It doesn't always have to be serious. And you read the comments on the introducing post, there are people that are saying like, I was going to buy X watch at multiple times the price. Now my money is going towards a Kermit from Oris because it makes me happy. And I think that's great.
It brings me to my question. Do we want to see more Muppet watches? Do we want to see Miss Piggy? Do we want to see Big Bird or
give
no?
Give me a beaker. He's the only one I ever identified with.
I asked if I could write my entire introduction in the voice of the Swedish chef, and I was promptly turned down by our esteemed editors that was not going to go over well as an introducing post. But
that's, I think it's great. Who knows? Maybe we'll see more Muppet-themed watches from Oris in the future. Certainly, if given the seeming popularity of the Kermit, I wouldn't be surprised. Look, let's get into another brand I've got on the list here. Tony, you want to chat JLC? Jaeger LeCoultre.
I always go with JLC. Born in the Midwest of America. Yeah.
I'm just used to people like really ripping on my pronunciation.
I'm not even gonna try. I don't try with any of the French words, man. JLC was our first appointment on Tuesday. It was great. It's a Reverso year for them, so there were a lot of great Reversos. We saw some, you know, at the very high ends, some ones with really beautiful enameled case backs, the type of stuff you only see at a thing like Watches and Wonders. At the sort of entry level, they had a quartet of new slim Reversos with small seconds down at 6 o'clock. It starts at steel. The one that really stole my heart was rose gold with a black dial, but there's four of them. They're all great. There's a burgundy dial that works too, but the show stealer in a way is the chronograph. It's in rose gold and steel. It's an expensive watch. It's 21,000 US in steel. So it's expensive, but on the front side, it looks kind of like a normal Reverso, but on the back side, there's a slightly skeletonized chronograph. It's quite fun to just play with it and watch the mechanism working. There's a fun little thing because it's a Reverso. The minute counter is a retrograde down at 6 o'clock. And once it gets past 15 minutes, it does this cool little thing where it'll quickly kind of tick forward to 30 minutes before it zips back to zero. I'm not really sure if there's a practicality to that, but it's like, it's fun, you know, mechanical watchmaking, which is what you want from JLC, if anyone else. So it's a big Reverso year. And look, I walked in wearing my Cartier tank, to be honest with you, kind of the other big rectangular watch in the business. And I left liking the Reverso and I might be a convert, to be honest with you.
I mean, they're really, really charming watches. And there's something that I've always liked. I think they were some of the first sort of complicated watches I ever came across as I first got into watchmaking were, you know, some of the Sphere Tourbillon stuff from JLC back in the day, the Duometras, and then into some of the wilder Reversos, which were having a sort of renaissance for what I guess would have been the 80th anniversary at the time. This is some time ago, of course. And they really are charming things that blend, or that can run the whole gambit from a single dial on one side, kind of the classic. Then you get into the 1931 stuff. Then you get into some of the thinner stuff, and then you get into the complicated stuff. I think it's still one of the coolest, like, dual time watches, is where you just have one time on one side and one time on the other, the day nights.
Those are still one of my favorites. Yeah.
I always get excited anytime I see one. It was actually the first press trip I was ever on with Ben, was a JLC launch at Las Vegas for the Master Ultra Thin QP.
Did you guys get into any trouble in Vegas?
No, I mean, they tried their best. We nerded out as much as we needed to, and then went to bed. No, not too much trouble. I think that's and the only time I've ever been in Vegas, I was there for a solid like 20 hours. Yeah, Ben says I don't strike him as a Las Vegas guy. No, not so much my speed, but I do really like that QP, the Master Ultra Thin, and of course the Reversos and such. All right, let's jump over to IWC before this episode gets fully out of hand in terms of length. Yeah, I thought the Ingenieur was really impressive in person, especially the titanium one, which for me leans into the idea of an integrated bracelet and a very sporty watch, and so sort of like works in a way that differentiates IWC from kind of a lot of the other stuff that they make, which is commonly in steel.
My question for you is, do you think IWC, it looks like a great watch, but do you think that IWC is on time with this, or do you think they're a couple years late to the party in terms of this craze of stainless steel integrated sports and everything?
Look, I think if Tudor can release a 7922 reference in 2023 rather than 2017, sure, or 2012, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, exactly. When did the Aura 65 come out? When did the Longines Heritage Diver come out? If we're referencing something from 1972 or 76 or whatever, then yeah, why not do it now? I would say I think that they did take a crack at the Ingenieur a few years ago, and I think it had like kind of middling success. It wasn't panned, but I think people wanted something closer to the original sort of concept, and I think that's what we're getting with this new model. It'll be interesting to see where they take it from here. And otherwise, we saw, like I said, with the chronographs, like just kind of some nice expressions of the pilot, the Top Gun sort of aesthetic, into a slightly smaller case, which I'm never going to complain about.
I really like the Ingenieur. When I first saw it, I think it's going to be a hit. However, what do you guys think of the price point? I believe it starts at 10.
I was really surprised.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too. And what is the titanium going for, 12 or 14?
I think it's 14 US, and the steel is around 11 US. And look, the watch wears really nicely. It's 40 millimeters diameter, 46-ish lug to lug, and maybe 11 millimeters thick. It wears really nicely. It wears like a modern iteration of the Ingenieur should. It's a tough price point to be at. If it were 8,000, 9,000, if it were sub 10K, this would be a hell of a watch, and people would be running to IWC right now to buy it. Titanium at that price is more than the Yachtmaster, which makes it a tough space to be. I know the Yachtmaster is not going to be gettable at retail anyway, probably. Yeah. So maybe it's an alternative in that respect, but it's a tough place to be. It's an aggressive price point, so we'll see how it works out for him, I suppose.
Yeah, I, the thing that I have to measure when I say that I'm surprised by the price point is, like, I'm obviously not a buyer for the majority of the watches that we're going to see, the vast majority. So you just know the number, and you start to see it against other numbers. But one, like, things have gotten legitimately more expensive in the last few years, watches of all kind, especially when you start to factor for the delta between a retail price, an actualized street price, and then, let's say, a secondary market price if the watch changes hands later on. And I think within that space, the pricing becomes less extreme, but it still has to reflect against the same watch. And I was kind of surprised by the price point, but otherwise very much kind of impressed by the overall execution of a new Ingenieur. And like I said, I think hopefully they're able to stick with it and continually develop the watch, whereas the last one had a few generations and then was phased out. So maybe this one they'll find more of a base with it and keep moving.
This feels like the Genta-inspired Ingenieur we've been waiting for, so I'm excited to see where they go with it. If this is just the start, this is a better starting point than where we were, 24 hours ago.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I think that's a good place to leave IWC. It was a fun meeting. They've got a Mercedes C111 in their booth, so that's worth it enough for me. I think that's only the second one I've ever seen in my life. So, and it could be the same car for all I know. There aren't certainly too many of those. Look, to close out Mark, you want to talk a little bit about your chance to get to go see MBNF? Not a watch you're just going to see on the street typically, unless you're walking around with Ben yesterday, but that's a different story.
You know, funny enough, I've messaged with Max a couple times. I've messaged with some of his team. Arnaud has been really great, and I've made it a point to try to pay attention to what they're doing, because I not only really enjoy their watches, I enjoy the people that they're working with, Kari Voutilainen, working on some of the movements and some other things. And it's just a fascinating story. And again, it's one of these things, like, I'm not a buyer for this, but to be able to experience it in some way, is this is why we're here. So I saw that there was a meeting happening later in the week that I wasn't going to be able to attend. I reached out and just said, like, hey, is there any chance?
Is the new space pretty cool?
The new space is really cool.
So that's the Mad House, for those wondering. Normally you meet them at the Mad Gallery, which is in central Geneva. But now they're in a new spot called the Mad House.
And the Mad House is super cool. It's an old kind of villa, farmhouse-y vibe, three stories. A lot of the original architecture, and the fact that you've got these hyper modern watches being made in such a traditional space and what looks like a traditional workshop is really, really cool. They were nice enough to take me around and show me, you know, some of the processes and how they mock up the cases and some of the things that they've tried to do that haven't worked from their history. And then at the end, you walk into a room and you've got more MBNFs than you could ever imagine seeing in your life. And they just say, what do you want to shoot? And I mean, that's the best thing possible and that could come out of a trip to Geneva, is seeing stuff that you're never going to see. Yep. And having somebody be happy that you are excited to play around with them and take some photos and just experience their work.
I don't disagree. And I think that's kind of a nice place to end this episode, an episode that was highly featured, watches that we won't see again and we're delighted to see in the first place. Mark, Brandon, Tony, Ben, who's off mic, Jeff, Danny, also off mic. Jeff, thank you for the song so much. I really appreciate it. The singing was off mic. Jeff, thank you so much for the Kermit impersonation. This has been an absolute treat, guys. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Tune in tomorrow for day 3 from Watches and Wonders. We'll have another daily episode. No idea who will be on it or what we'll talk about. I couldn't have planned this one at all. But if you're enjoying the show, please tell a friend, share it around, subscribe if you like it, and leave a comment if there's anything you need to know more about. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll chat to you in something like 24 hours.